And we tend to judge in three modalities. Like my hyperachiever saboteur will keep me up until I achieve things. It is the thing that like drives me up that mountain. And I don't even get to celebrate when I'm on the mountain because I'm already off looking for the next thing to achieve.
Hey Zesties, welcome to the Gleeful Talk Show, where we share zesty stories to cultivate the happiness and hero within. I'd like to give a major shout out to our zesty Jerson Belmonte for supporting the show. He's such a master guitarist and I actually call him Master Jerson. Give my regards to Cleo and Nika as well, and I hope you guys are keeping safe there in Ireland. So Zesties, if you haven't already, please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to your podcast. It definitely helps a lot. We can also connect on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Just search Gleeful Talk Show. If you'd like to support the show, please head down to the episode notes to find out how. In this episode, we'll hear about the inspiring adventure of our guest and how we can incorporate mental fitness in our own lives. Our guest is a certified life and mental fitness transformation coach who helps women rediscover their inner purpose and pursue their dreams. She was working in the corporate world for more than 16 years, but decided to quit her job at Google in 2020, sold all her belongings, and took a one-way flight to Ghana with her husband. She found Project Faces and Places to capture stories of people and places to show how much kindness, love, and beauty there is no matter where you go. Please welcome Amy Yip. Hi, Amy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being on the show. In my introduction earlier, I mentioned about that you quit your job at Google at 2020. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone wants to work at Google. So what was in your mind during that time prior to that major decision?
Yeah. So the thing is that every time people hear about my story, they say, oh, that was so courageous. I wish I had the courage to do that too. And then they will follow it with something like, but I'm in the midst of my career and I can't do that right now. Or I'm the breadwinner for my family and I can't do that right now. The laundry list of reasons is long. And I promise you, I am no more courageous than anybody who is listening to this. It was not an easy decision for me either. Just like many people out there, I had a laundry list of shoulds in my head. I am the youngest of three girls. At the time, I didn't have kids. I didn't have a family. I didn't have a husband. And so I felt like I should be the one to take care of my parents. And people told me that because they're aging and there's this responsibility for it. I got married and husbands change plans, right? And my husband was doing his own venture. And so me working at Google, I was the breadwinner. I was like, well, I should be the foundation, the stable one, the responsible one. And then the biggest should, I was in my mid-30s at the time. And I'm sure a lot of women out there have heard this. You should just have babies, right? You should just be a mother. You're reaching that age, like, it's time. You're going to regret it. Why would you do this? Go travel later in your life. And so there were just so much pressure on me. And I had all these things in my head of like, well, is it what I really want? Or is it because somebody else is telling me that I should want it? And of course, everyone told me you should just stay at Google. Like, why would you leave? Are you nuts? And so my husband and I, we knew we at least weren't ready to have kids. So we went and we got our embryos frozen. And we thought that was like really smart idea. And then there was a mishap at the storage facility. And we still don't know what happened, but we were notified and we were told that the embryo's viability is unknown until you plan to use it. And we weren't ready to be parents at the time, you know, and if for anybody who has gone through IVF or IUI or any of those fertility processes, that having hormones pumped into you is not fun, right? And so at the time, I just felt completely stuck. I didn't know what I should do or shouldn't do. I was like, maybe this is a sign. I should just do what everybody's telling me, to just have babies and stay here and live a quote unquote normal life. And I went on this self-help journey as a second generation Chinese American. There's this stigma of showing that you're not okay, but I was not okay on the inside. On the outside, you have to pretend like everything's okay. Mm-hmm. So I ended up just reading books because I couldn't talk to anybody about it. So I read books for like 8 months. I love Brené Brown, read every Brené Brown book and Who Moved My Cheese, all those books. And those gave me a lot of cool insights, but I still didn't know, should I just have babies or do I want to pursue this travel dream of mine? And I ended up going down to Peru for a 5-day ayahuasca ceremony. Ayahuasca is it's a medicinal plant that Peruvians use in a ceremony type fashion. And it's supposed to help you gain clarity. A friend told me about it and she's like, it's supposed to help you get more clarity. And I'm like, that's what I need. I need clarity. I need to figure stuff out. So I went down to Peru, 5-day ceremony, got a lot of great insights again, but still no idea. Do I have babies or do I do this travel thing? And with the decision, it's not like you can decide I'm going to have a baby and then I could return it if I changed my mind. So it's a very hard decision to have to make. But after ayahuasca, I ended up going back to the US and a colleague told me about coaching. I had no clue what coaching was at the time, but I was desperate. I'm like, let me just try this. And my coach is the one who helped me to peel back my layers of the onion. So I always say humans are like onions deep down at our core. We know what matters. We know what our values are, what gets us excited. And then there's all these layers of the onion called the shoulds. And the shoulds, like
the shoulds.
You should do this. You should do that, right? Who you should and shouldn't be, what you should and shouldn't do, how you should and shouldn't act. And it comes from parents, teachers, managers, society, right? Like all these things that were put on us. And sometimes those layers of those shoulds are so thick, you lose a sense of what really matters to you. And like who you really are. And so my coach helped me peel back those layers one by one. And that was when I figured out what matters most to Amy. And that's when I made two decisions. One is I need to go do this travel and volunteer thing. It's been a dream of mine for over a decade. And if I don't do it, I'm going to regret it. The other thing that I made a decision on is I want to become a coach because that sucked. Being stuck in that place for so long, not knowing like what I really wanted to do and feeling like I had nobody to talk to. And so I enrolled and got my certification in coaching. And then January 2020 was when I left Google.
It was a very long journey. And with that coaching process that you underwent through prior to that major decision, so how long did that process in itself to think about or the program?
The entire process of like book reading and feeling stuck and questioning myself was probably 2 years, maybe give or take, right? Like I can't pinpoint when exactly it started, but it's like, as I started getting older, as things start changing, as I got into a more serious relationship, I got engaged and like things started building. It was almost like added weight onto my shoulder.
Yeah. And even if like, no matter how many years it is, like you feel it's much longer because you're stuck there.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the thing is at the time, you're right. Like, I just felt like, when is this going to be over? And it was also it felt a little like hopeless. Like either way, it's a no-win situation. And I felt like I didn't have choice. And that's actually the beauty of coaching. Is it helps you to see that you do have choice and to see what other choices there are, and then to help you feel empowered to have agency to take the choice. Because I at the time I saw two choices. I either do this thing and like never have kids, or maybe my kids might come out with health issues, or I have kids now and forget about this dream, right? Those are the only two choices I could see at the time.
Yeah, I could actually totally relate on that, but I'll get to that later. 2020, January, you left Google, mm-hmm. went to yep. Ghana, and mm-hmm. then COVID hit like maybe Feb or March. So how were you able to cope all of these changes in the world in the midst of pandemic, and then also the change in your personal life?
I will attribute all of that to mental fitness. So mental fitness is the notion of building. It's the analogy I often like to use to describe it is physical fitness, right? Like, so if you were trying to climb Kilimanjaro, or you were trying to run a marathon, if you are physically fit, you would be able to do it without much stress. If you're not physically fit, then as you're climbing the mountain, the steeper it gets, the more exhausted and physically stressed you'll get, right? And it's the same thing with mental fitness, is around how you're able to handle life's challenges. And the thing is, life will always give you challenges. So how are you able to build that muscle in your brain to be able to handle those things? One of the perspectives, the sage deeper wisdom perspective with mental fitness, is can you see the gift and opportunity in the circumstance? And sometimes even in situations, like in the midst of a situation, it's hard to see it. It's hard to be like, what's the gift and opportunity in this? Like, I don't know. It's really hard. But if you were to look back in your life, and I have all my clients do this, I have them draw a lifeline, the highs and lows of their life. And when you actually look at that, what you will notice is for every high point in your life, it was only made possible because of a low point, right? Mm-hmm. Without the low points, you wouldn't have had that high point. An example is breakups. In the midst of a breakup, it feels horrible. I've been through many of those. You know, I feel rejected and like I'm unloved and I'm in tears and I'm like, I'm never going to find another guy like this again. And you're just in distress. But had all those breakups not happened, I wouldn't be with my amazing husband today. And so it's really being able to believe and trust that there's a gift or an opportunity in every situation, no matter how bad it seems. And for me, in Ghana, I got stuck there for 7 months. And a few of the gifts, when I was working at Google, I used to travel every other week. I was constantly on an airplane. I think the year prior to me leaving in 2019, I traveled around planet Earth like 8 times or something ridiculous like that. I was always on an airplane. And I had always said, I wish I could slow down, stay in a place, not have to get an airplane, and just enjoy stuff that I used to love doing, like reading, sketching, sleeping, you know, essential things like that. And I got that. I got the gift of being able to just rest. And then the other gift that I got from being in Ghana is I rediscovered some of my passions. So I rediscovered my love for writing. I rediscovered my love for bringing people together and creating community. And the unintended consequence of me like writing, sharing, bringing people together is it led to the growth of my coaching practice. Originally, when I first left, I had only wanted to keep 3 or 4 of my clients so that I could travel and not have to constantly be doing coaching calls. And since I was stuck, I started writing and creating groups and speaking, doing podcast interviews, and it just led to the growth of my business. And so right now I have a thriving coaching business and I'm doing a lot of workshops, and that wouldn't have happened if COVID hadn't hit and if I wasn't stuck in Ghana.
Yeah. The thing is that most of us, to grasp the concept of mental fitness is mm-hmm. it's looking quite simple, but getting there is hard. So what would be your tips on how to develop a healthy mind, just like on a high level?
Yeah, so there's actually a lot of science on this. And there are 3 core muscles at the root of mental fitness. So the first muscle is called the saboteur interceptor. We all tend to self-sabotage. The saboteurs live on one side of your brain. So when you are in the self-sabotaging mode, I could put your brain under an MRI scan and you will see that side activated. There are 10 different saboteurs. The judge is the main one. He or she is the master saboteur. And we tend to judge in three modalities. The first is judge of self. We also call that the inner critic. It's the one that says you're not good enough and why are you not? It's constantly berating you. The second modality of the judge is judge of others. And it is the one that's like, she's too fat, he's too dumb, that person's too, right? It's constantly looking for what's wrong with others. And then the third modality of the judge is on situations or circumstances. So it would be the one that says, oh, you're stuck in Ghana. That's horrible. That's bad. COVID, it's bad. This whole situation is horrible. So the judge is the master saboteur and it judges in those three different ways. And then the judge saboteur has 9 accomplice saboteurs, and we all have different ones. We might have a few, and those are like hyper-rational, controller, hyperachiever, pleaser, avoider, and 4 other ones. There is actually an assessment you can take online to see which of those saboteurs you have. And then it gives you a detailed description. And it's almost like creating a wanted poster. Like the more you're aware of it, the more you're able to catch it. And so you can take the assessment and really get to know which ones are your saboteurs. And so you build that muscle by building the awareness and recognizing all that it does to you and the lies. For example, I have the hyperachiever saboteur, and a lot of people ask, well, isn't achieving a good thing? And the way to think about saboteurs is it's kind of like a knife, right? It's a knife can be used by a surgeon to save someone. It could also be used by a murderer to kill someone. And so the saboteurs are basically overusing your strength in a negative way, right? Like my hyperachiever saboteur will keep me up until I achieve things. It is the thing that like drives me up that mountain. And I don't even get to celebrate when I'm on the mountain because I'm already off looking for the next thing to achieve, right? Like it tells me you will be happy when you achieve this thing, but am I really happy? No, because I'm up there and I'm like, okay, that's done, next thing. And so that's the way the saboteurs work and the way they lie to us. And then the second muscle is the sage. The sage is like a deeper wisdom, right? You know how sometimes you have that deeper wisdom and you just know certain things. And so the sage lives on a different side of the brain. So again, if I put your brain under an MRI scan, depending on which is being activated, I could see that on an MRI scan. And so the perspective of there's always a gift or an opportunity in every circumstance is the sage wisdom. And then the third muscle is the self-command muscle. And that's when you're hijacked by a saboteur. It's hard to be like, well, what's the gift or opportunity in this? And so what the self-command does is it helps you shift from one mode to the other. And we can practice one if you want, a self-command exercise.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to do that?
Yeah, that would be cool.
Okay. It is a quick 10 second. So I invite you to take 2 fingertips, any of your 2 favorite fingertips, and rub them together with such attention that you feel all the fingertip ridges. Feel all the sensations of touch. And just notice your fingertip ridges. So that was 10, 15 seconds. 10 seconds is about 1 rep. So it's like doing 1 bicep curl. And what would happen if I put your brain under an MRI scan right now, by doing that exercise, you will notice that the side where your saboteurs live ever so slightly quieted. And then the side where your sage lives ever so slightly became activated. And so in moments when you notice that your saboteurs are taking over, you do exercises like this to shift into sage.
Oh, wow. That's very interesting. Love it. If everyone knows it, At least we will, you know, prevent depression. There's a different side of depression, but at least you have that coping mechanism to combat adversity. With mental fitness, does it also come with physical fitness? Do you attribute also like being physically fit so that you will be mentally fit? And what are your regimen or your morning routine?
So there's definitely correlation between your overall health comes from a lot of things, mental fitness, physical fitness, all of those things. At the same time, you can't just have one without the other for your health, right? Like if you're, and they're different muscles, your physical requires you to maybe do burpees or sit-ups or whatever that is. And mental fitness is all in your mind and the muscles there, and building both is important. I used to only focus on physical fitness. I thought I was healthy because I only thought about the physical aspect. I used to run marathons and do CrossFit. I have climbed Kilimanjaro, and I would challenge my body in those ways and did not think twice about my own mental well-being or my mental fitness. Today, I'm much more balanced. So I really think about my physical, what I'm eating, my mental well-being. Am I resting enough? Am I sleeping? I used to think it was normal to just sleep 5 hours, 4 or 5 hours a day. I'm like, I could sleep when I pass away. And I realized that it's actually not healthy, like less productive when I haven't slept. And so right now, my daily regimen, I wake up pretty early, around 6 o'clock, sometimes 5. It just depends on how tired I am. I don't use an alarm to wake up. So whenever I wake up, and in the morning, I start off with 10 to 20 minutes of some sort of a workout. It could be yoga. It could be hardcore something. It could be running. So I actually listen to my body, and whatever it tells me it needs for the day, I go do it. So I do that. And then I take a very cold shower for like a 2-minute cold shower. If you've ever heard of like Wim Hof.
The Wim Hof method.
So I take a cold shower after that.
2 minutes. And then I meditate. 2 minute cold. Yeah. I can't. Yeah. I tried like only a few seconds, but okay.
I promise you, I used to take burning hot showers. I mean, I still love the burning hot showers, but I used to say, there's no way I could take a cold shower. It is the most uncomfortable thing. But now it's quite refreshing. I actually took a cold shower before chatting with you here because I'm like, oh, I want to feel more refreshed and alive. So I went in and I took a cold shower. But I do 2 minutes in the morning and then I meditate for 15, 20 minutes. I have some sort of a mantra that I use for the day. Lately, I've been using the mantra of today is going to be a great day because it's a choice and I'm going to choose for it to be so. And that's the mantra that I use to start for the day. Nice. And then I journal. I make coffee. I journal. And then I like to read or learn something also in the morning. So my latest learning is Spanish. Actually, that's been a goal of mine. So I started in January and I'm doing Spanish lessons. So every morning I do like 6 to 10 minutes of Spanish lessons. So that's the start of my day. It's maybe hour and a half, 2 hours. But the thing is, the way that you start your day has an effect on the rest of your day. And so I used to just jump out of bed and be like off running to whatever I needed to do. Like I'm running late to something or exhausted because I didn't sleep and I'm waking up with an alarm. And so this sets me up for a good day. It sets me up to be much more productive and to be more present with what I'm doing.
Oh, great. Because me, I struggle actually because there's like a term for like night person and you're a morning person, a night person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm sure you have your thoughts on that.
Yes, because I used to say, I'm a night person. I'm a night owl. There's no way I'm getting up that early. 9 a.m. used to be early for me. I struggled. I was always awake till like 2, 3, 4 in the morning. And It was my husband who he did some sort of a challenge trying to get up at like 4 a.m. for an entire month. And I'm like, you are nuts. I am not getting it. That's when I sleep. And he woke up a few mornings at 4 a.m. And once he's up and I hear him, I just couldn't go back to sleep. And so one time I woke up at right after him, like at 5 a.m. And it's like, I made coffee, I did laundry, I did all this stuff. And then it was 6:30 and I'd done all this stuff already. And it was nice to be up before the world is awake. And so I started trying to see if I could reset my rhythm. Mm. And it took some time, but do I still like sometimes staying up late? Yeah, but I do fall asleep pretty early now too.
Oh, yeah, it's really just the discipline and the consistency, I guess.
Yeah, and it's really just about building the habit, because once your body gets used to something, it'll just become its normal. If you drive or if you ride a bicycle, and once you've done it enough times, your body's just so used to it that you don't even think about it. It just knows, okay, it's 9 p.m., time to get tired and go to sleep.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. I love your program that you empower women. And mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, what is the one thing that your program did to your client that you didn't really expect?
Oh, I love that question. One of the most heartwarming things that a client emailed me about was that prior to our work, she used to have a very challenging relationship with her parents. Right? They gave her anxiety. They gave her stress. She was never able to talk to them. She was like, my dad is always mansplaining. And she's like 52, 53, okay. Right? Like, and her parents are still trying to tell her how to live her life. They still see her as a kid. And after our work, she had a conversation with her parents, specifically her father. And it was a conversation where she asked him about his experiences, his history, his life. And she just emailed me afterwards and she thanked me. She was like, this is one of the best conversations I've ever had with my dad. It wasn't mansplaining. It wasn't, I'm telling you how to live my life. But it was like a deep conversation where she actually got to understand what her father was like, what his childhood was like, his fears, his dreams, all of those things. And she said, I would have missed out on this opportunity while my father is alive and somewhat healthy if it hadn't been for you and the work that we did.
It's very heartwarming. It's a very intangible thing with what you do. Like I said, like it's a business or anything, but the thing that you impart to your clients or to the people is that this similar moments with that what they need. Mm-hmm. And yeah, going back to the one that you mentioned about women who are boxed in the society that, oh, you're just made to be making babies or something. Mm-hmm. What can you advise to our listeners whom I call the Zesties about this dilemma of what the society tells them?
I have so many thoughts. One is recognizing what it is that you really want rather than what everybody else wants for you. Like, do you really want kids? Are you sure you want to have kids? And another thing to consider is a lot of women, when they have kids, or men and people who have kids when they're younger, they actually don't know very much about themselves, about life, right? And I've actually talked to a lot of people who have had kids in their late 30s, early 40s, and they have such a deeper understanding of themselves, of life. They've done things and they make better parents because they're able to instill that on their kids. So that's kind of like something to consider. Do I want to live my life and be able to teach my kids and be a better parent? Or do I want to do this while I'm still 23 and I don't even know what I want to do with the rest of my life? So that's one consideration. The other thing is to recognize that you don't have control over having a baby either, right? I have friends who have been trying, who are much younger. I'm turning 40 this year. And so I have friends who are 30, 30, 35, and who have been going through IVF, IUI, trying to get pregnant. And they are so set on it. And they have had so many miscarriages and issues with it. Like, I have a friend who's been trying to get pregnant for 5 years and who's been going through IVF like back to back. And her mind is so determined on having a baby. And the thing is, it is not within your control. So even if you make that decision, I'm going to settle down and have kids right now, you should be okay with the fact that it might not happen. And are you okay with that? And are there other options you're exploring? So my husband and I right now, we're working on pregnancy and getting pregnant naturally. At the same time, we're also looking at adoption, because regardless, we want kids. And so if we can't have it naturally, there's so many kids out there. And so we're looking at that as an option.
Great. Thank you for your insights. The thing is that it's, even though right now there is now more awareness that, you know, oh, you have a choice, but still women themselves, it's not really embedded yet as much as it would have been.
I mean, the one more thing, the other piece is that it's just not a topic that's talked about enough. Like, all we see on social media and Instagram, like Facebook, is, oh, it's, look at my child, it's so wonderful to be a mom, the beauty of it, right? Like, you see that in all the advertising and everything. Motherhood is not always beautiful, nor is it easy. And people don't talk about that enough. People don't talk about the fact that there's postpartum depression, that infertility is a real thing. It's a bigger issue than most people think of. And it's not just a woman's issue, because men have infertility problems too. And women get the brunt of that, right? Like, they get blamed for it. Yeah. And so it just... having the conversation, talking to people, because also I know so many people who they live in this private shame or guilt or pain and feel like they're the only ones going through it. And I promise you, you're not the only one going through it. There's so many other people that are also suffering in pain in silence. And so can we create more community and create more open dialogue around the topic?
Exactly. Exactly. I totally agree with that. I have some fun questions. Are you ready?
Sure.
It's not related, but yes. So are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. If a movie was made of your life, what genre would it be and who would play it?
Oh, man.
Who would play
comedy?
You?
Comedy.
Oh, really? Yeah. I would have imagined it would be like something documentary or, but you choose comedy.
Comedy, because if you really get to know me, I am one of the most silly people in the world and I can laugh at myself. I run around and do stupid things all the time. My husband jokes, I also get lost all the time. So he's like, you're the only person who could get lost in your own apartment. And so it would be comedy. And also I like to just laugh at things. I think I forgot, there's some statistic out there that as kids we used to laugh like 300 times a day, and as adults it became 300 times every like few months. And so laughter is so important, and so it would be comedy. And the person that I would want to play me is Reese Witherspoon, just because I adore her. She's kind of like she's got this girlish quality about her, and she's just really adorable and cute.
Ah, yeah. Great, great. And then next question, if you were a wrestler, what would be your entrance theme song?
I used to actually be a huge fan of wrestling. I don't know, but for some reason, back in the day, there were these two wrestlers called Bushwhackers. And you've got to Google them. They're old. That just goes to show how old I am. But they used to just like charge in with their arms like cavemen. And so that would be I don't know what song they used, but whatever theme song they used, I would want to use that. Because
I will Google that one later.
Okay.
And then one last question. If you could have a dinner with any three dead or alive people, who would it be and why?
The first person would be the Buddha, because I'm just so curious about him and his philosophies and his life and all his experiences. And I've read a lot of books about Buddhism, but I still have so many questions about it. So I would love to meet him. Another person is Michael Jackson.
You're a fan.
Well, so
it's just kind of like the segue from the Buddha to Michael.
Maybe it's because I recently watched the Michael Jackson documentary, so I have a lot of questions on my mind about it. But like when I was a kid, he was my idol, right? Like everyone loved him, and he went through so much. Everything that he did, I'm like, but why? And what was your life like? He must have been so lonely. And I just have so many questions. And I want to know about his story and what that experience must have been like if you were a star at age 5 and never got any privacy and never had genuine love, like real love, not fan love, but real love from people. Yeah. So he would be the other person. And then the last would be my grandfather. Or one of my grandparents in general. But I know my dad, so my dad's dad passed away when my dad was still young. And so there's so much family history. I'm actually writing a book right now, and I've been interviewing my parents about their life and their history. And there's so much about that side of the family and about my grandfather's life that I'm really curious about. So I would love to have dinner with him and talk to him.
Oh, great. Do you have any release dates yet that you can?
No. I mean, my aspiration is to have it sometime by early next year. But the idea of the book is around Asian Pacific Americans, Asian Americans. And what this common theme that I've constantly heard is that people struggle to have conversations with their parents. Right. So there's this whole side for Asian Americans of like shame and guilt and all these stresses of not belonging because you don't belong in the US. And I'm sure it's the same in Australia. It's like you don't belong there. At the same time, when you go back to your home country, you don't feel like you belong either. And so there's this lack of belonging. There's this cultural difference, feeling like you can't have true conversations with your parents. But at the same time, we don't, for many people, they're unable to even have that conversation with their parents, and their parents' voice and their story has not been heard. I'm writing a book around how to have those conversations and also giving light to the parents' perspective and their stories and stuff, like how they look at success, why they pushed us, why, like all of that.
I'm looking forward to it. It's a very good concept and making people aware of it, because the parent side as well, we wouldn't know unless we talk with them. Last pieces of advice for our zesties.
Spend more time celebrating yourself. People don't celebrate themselves enough, right? Especially women. But celebrating yourself every day is so important. It's good for your health. It's good for staying optimistic. It's good for coping strategies, for stress, all of those things. And it keeps you motivated to keep going. And I always like to use the analogy of a baby learning to walk, because when a baby is first learning to walk, what does it do? It kind of stands up, wobbles, falls on its face. And then what do the parents do? They run over. They're like, oh, baby John, baby Jane, you were so close. That was wonderful. Keep it going. Now imagine doing what we typically do to ourselves to that baby, which would be like, oh, you're already a year old and you did, that wasn't standing up. You just fell flat on your face. That's not walking. You should just quit now, right? Like, what do you think it would do to that child's sense of like self-worth, their motivation to want to keep going and trying, right? And so it is important to celebrate every day, all the little achievements, no matter how big or small they might seem.
Thank you, Amy, for that very wonderful advice for our zesties. And where can our zesties find you?
They can send an email to me, amy@amyyipcoaching.com, or they can visit my website, amyyipcoaching.com.
All right. Thank you so much, Amy, for this very inspirational talk. And it was great having you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you to all of the Zesties for listening.
Hey, Zesties. Thanks for listening. I've learned a lot from this conversation with Amy, and I actually tried an online assessment. I mean, I just Googled it, but the website I tried it on was positiveintelligence.com, and believeincoaching.com on some of the description of the results. I'm a bit surprised, but not surprised at the same time with the results. Surprised in a way that I thought I might be more of a hyperachiever or perhaps a controller, but I'm actually the very far end as a hypervigilant. So on a nutshell, a hypervigilant person is a person who is frequently in a state of alertness to any hidden threats, which often are not real, and so become anxious and nervous about the danger that may come from anywhere. Their extreme sensitivity to their surroundings may make it difficult for them to relax and sleep well. At work, they may tend to overanalyze situations and believe them to be worse than they are. So how about you, Zesty? Have you tried the online assessment? Let me know on the comments on Instagram or just email me and we could gladly talk about it. Thank you and have a gleeful week.